Good morning, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for August 14th, 2011.
I can't get in enough.
Host, Reverend Koyo Kobose, I'm glad you joined us. It's the middle of August. And in the Central Valley, we are enjoying pretty nice weather. For us, it's mid-90s. Dry heat, but in the nighttime it cools off. Maybe in the early morning hours it's only 60 degrees. And as I walk out down our gravel driveway, about 300 feet to the road, at the newspaper, with my good buddy EZ, our yellow lab. I always remember a friend of mine who, when he was, you know, in the early morning, brisk, nice and cool morning, he would always say, "This feels great. It makes you really feel alive," you know. And again, I think all of us like the nice, calm, quiet, the cool morning time. There's something about the beginning of a day. And to capture that kind of whenever we have a gap and we're going to start something new or, you know, go someplace, or I read a quote in one of the Zen daily calendar sayings, "To begin is the only joy in life." Now, immediately when you hear that, you think, well, how about the middle? How about the end? Isn't the accomplishment good and everything and so forth? And of course, sayings are kind of dramatic, not exactly overstated, but they're making a certain point and in a certain context. So, but I often think about that, that indeed the beginning is a special time. And any moment can be a beginning. Well, let's begin with our guest today to give us a Dharma glimpse. This is Seo Thomas DeMann of Las Vegas, Nevada. He's part of our Lay Minister 4 group. And so for today's Dharma glimpse, Seo Thomas Sensei.
Good morning. In this current life, I was not born with two eyes. I was not born blind, but perhaps I was. It was not until I walked the path of the Buddha that I became aware of my two eyes. I will go to my grave with my two eyes, and I will be most grateful. I guess it is time for an explanation of what I am talking about. When I came into this current existence, I was surrounded by a state of ignorance to the truth of life. Many things were not clear to me. My two eyes were missing, and they were the truth of impermanence and interdependence. These two eyes are the most important things that are with me every moment of my life now. Lessons of impermanence are with us everywhere, from the drooping flowers which we loved yesterday to the wrinkles which appear on our formerly wrinkle-free face. Let us not forget our changing attitudes and opinions. What we held in the highest esteem yesterday may be taken as a misguided view or opinion today. The shirt I like so much today may be in disfavor tomorrow. Perhaps the color doesn't appeal to me anymore, or the shirt may be wearing thin from excessive use. Now I just don't like it anymore. My beautiful automobile became dented in the parking lot, and now I don't treat it like my baby. After all, it is just a car. Borders recently announced that it is closing all of its stores. My favorite bookstore had always been Barnes & Noble's. I've had a membership card there for many years, but now I purchase almost all of my books online at Amazon because of better prices and speedy delivery. More impermanence. How interesting. 2 weeks ago today, my daughter and granddaughter came for a visit from Michigan. The week flew by way too fast. They are already gone. In permanence. Nothing remains the same. Interdependence. On good days, I may feel like I own the world and can do it all. But I really can't. Every action that I make has its own reaction. This action affects everything and ultimately comes back to me. I go to the grocery store to buy more tomatoes, but they are sold out. The truckers have gone on strike, and deliveries aren't made to the local stores. I am dependent on the driver. However, I depend heavily also on the farmer to plant the seeds and for nature to water the soil. The sun must also shine for the tomato plant to grow. What if the soil wasn't fertilized? Everything I do or even want is also dependent on some other people or conditions. Now I realize that no man is an island. Impermanence and interdependence are like two laws of gravity, which we cannot escape from, no matter how hard we try. If I try to deny the existence of these two eyes, I will create suffering in my life. I can run, but I cannot hide. I face these two eyes every day with each waking moment. My two eyes have taught me, Sona Mama, the way things are. Without my two eyes, I would be a very confused and disillusioned person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We were talking to Tanaka Sensei last week. He happened to mention, that Buddhism is a religion of awakening, not a religion of believing. In a way, this is a very basic difference and helpful, because most of the time when someone says something, finding out you're Buddhist or something, or you're in an interfaith setting, oh, you're Buddhist. Well, what do Buddhists believe in? It's such a natural question, as though the set of beliefs is the thing, the main thing in religion. And of course, Buddhism has beliefs, but how is it expressed? Where is the emphasis? How are things manifested? And if we say, what does that mean when we say Buddhism is a religion of awakening, not just believing? The great illustrations that were made in the Dharma Glimpse, do we believe in the law of gravity? We have to live in accordance with it, or we'll suffer, to awaken, to realize, to see. To realize, I suppose that sort of means kind of like a mental thing, realize something. But sometimes when we realize something, we say, oh, I see. Meaning, I get it. But that's interesting, because seeing something is much more sensory and not just understanding something, but you see it. Seeing is believing, it says. Now, awakening, even though it says asleep, awake, it has to do with our eyes. Because when we're asleep, our eyes are closed. And when we awaken, that means we open our eyes. Our eyes are opened. So, remember the famous story about the man, the first time meeting the Buddha. Are you, I don't remember the exact exchange, but Are you a sage? Says, no. Are you a seer? No. Are you this? Are you a god? He said, no. Well, what are you? And the Buddha said, I'm awakened. And I guess he means, you see, I guess why the word Buddha itself means the awakened one, the literal meaning of Buddha. And I think the word Buddha existed in the Sanskrit Pali language before the historical Buddha time, so he must have chosen, or it was chosen, that title or adjective to describe himself or him. That when you see something, this is what wisdom is, you know, not just knowing something, you see it. You really see it, it's to awaken. And it must be, you know, the big difference between the waking state and the sleep state. When you're sleeping, wow, geez. But when you wake up, hey, the whole world wakes up with you. The whole world comes into being. Now you see everything. Sometimes when visiting groups used to come to the temple and I would talk about Buddhism a little bit and I'd talk about what the word Buddha meant. It's not somebody's name. It's sort of like a title, not somebody's family name. Of course, we say Gautama Buddha, then we know we're talking about the historical Buddha. If we say Amida Buddha, we're talking about a cosmic, universal type of a Buddha that symbolizes the spiritual qualities of wisdom and compassion. But the Buddha, the word Buddha, awakened one. So it's as though we ordinary people are going through life with our eyes closed, asleep. We're sleepwalking, spiritually speaking. But to play with this metaphor, this analogy, you say, well, you know, whenever you play any of these games when you're blindfolded, you're not exactly sure or very confident, and you're stumbling around, and you're bumping into furniture, and you could get around, but not very easy. And if the blindfold is taken off, you can see, it's like, you woke up. So what does it mean to wake up spiritually? Since we know we do have our two physical eyes and we take them for granted, so sometimes I think in the East they talk about the third eye of wisdom opening up. And that third eye, in a way, can see inwardly. Can see how we experience things when our eyes were closed and when our eyes are open. It knows that difference. But I think it's still just a plain good analogy of our two eyes, closed and open, or not seeing clearly. We need some glasses. We need some Dharma glasses. It's all blurry. It's all right, but sometimes we're walking around. But when you need a little bit clearer vision, when you're driving or when you're trying to read a sign or when you're trying to recognize somebody, not enough. Your vision has to be a little more fine-tuned. It's nice to have 20/20. Shoot, I just having trouble with my eyes. Of course, when you get older, you go and say, oh, you got 20/70 in this eye and you got 20/60 here, and you know that you need clear vision. Spiritually, indeed, I love the two eyes, impermanence, interdependency. So basic, those teachings right at the core of Buddhism and how we relate to the world, how we relate to others, how we relate to ourselves. Yeah, I like that. Buddha, the awakened one. And whenever I'm having problems, you might want to say, maybe I should open up my eyes a little wider. Maybe I should focus a little bit better. Hey, sometimes, you know, the fovea is where your cones are, your cones and rods, you know, the receptor cells of vision. The cones give you a color vision, and the rods give you a more active in dim illumination, blacks and whites and grays. But the rods are more plentiful in the periphery of your retina. But in the fovea, the center of your retina, there's a lot of more concentration of the cones, the sensory receptors. So this means that if it's kind of twilight-ish and you've seen somebody across the street and you want to try to recognize that person, don't look at that person directly. Kind of look to the side, sideways, because then the image will come in and hit more on the rods, the periphery of your perceptual field and your retina there. And you'll be able to have more visual acuity in the gray, blacks and grays, in this twilight time, you know. You don't need the color. I remember reading about this. So I just thought, it just flashed in my mind as a stray association. But this might mean sometimes when we meet a situation head on, a difficult situation, maybe we ought to step back and be sideways a little bit in order to get a clearer view of it. Sometimes we used to teach little children who are very susceptible to social influence, you know, sticks and stones. If someone gives you negative criticism or something, why stand there straight in front of it and let it hit you directly? Why? If someone jabs at you with a sharp stick or something, won't you want to sort of turn sideways? Someone shoots an arrow at you, a verbal barb, calls you a name, why not just turn your body sideways and feel that arrow zip by? Feel the breeze. Why just stand there with your chest puffed up and get hit by it and then say, why did you hit me? You no good. You hurt me. When the things come, just let it go by. And then go on about your business. Like water off a duck's back, they say. So maybe part of seeing things clearly is being able to have that kind of flexibility instead of the stubbornness of why things are in my way or, you know, and so forth. I was listening to the forum of our lay ministers trailblazer group, and when they get some interesting things, they communicate to one another, and one of them was talking about the Udai Sutra. He says, I was researching something and came across this sutra, and I liked it. So I tweaked it a little bit and printed it out for you. And I'm putting this copy on my desk, so I'll see it when I'm writing sermons. And I think I'll pass it on to you. This was what one of the members said. And here's the Udai Sutra. Thus I have heard. On the one occasion, the Blessed One was staying at Kosambi in Gosa, Posita's Park. At that time, the Venerable Yudayin was sitting surrounded by a large assembly of householders teaching the Dharma. The Venerable Ananda saw this and, on seeing him, went to the Blessed One. He bowed down, sat on one side, to one side, saying, "Venerable Yudayin, Lord, is sitting surrounded by a large assembly of householders teaching the Dharma." "Well, it's not easy to teach the Dharma, Ananda. The Dharma should be taught to others only when five qualities are established within the person teaching. What are these five? Well, the Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak step by step.' The Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak plainly, explaining the sequence of cause and effect.' Thirdly, the Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak out of compassion.' Fourth, the Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak not for the purpose of material personal gain.' And fifth, the Dharma should be taught with the thought, 'I will speak without exalting myself or disparaging others.' It is not easy to teach the Dharma to others, Ananda. The Dharma should be taught to others only when these five qualities are established within the person teaching." Yeah, that is nice. Very practical advice from the Buddha. Huh? Very pragmatic teacher. All wisdom is pragmatic. My reaction when I never, you know, knew about this, Yudayi Sutra, but I like the last one especially. That's all you need, maybe, that last one. "I will speak without exalting myself or disparaging others." How often our own ego or pride gets in the way, or, you know, or putting down others, criticizing or blaming others. And this doesn't have to be about teaching the Dharma. No way! This is how to live. For all of us. It's not easy to live awakened life. It's not easy to see clearly. We're always losing our glasses. We're misplacing our Dharma glasses. Maybe it's harder to remember five things, but hey, try to live, try to speak, try to act without having to puff oneself up, without having to put others down. It's something that any easily known, hard to live. Hard to actualize, that's really, I guess, keeping our two eyes open regarding ourselves and others, seeing it the right way. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. I thank you for calling in and listening. I thank Seiyo Thomas Sensei for giving a nice Dharma glimpse. And for all of our nice technology, that when it works fine, we say, ah. So until next time, keep going and have a beautiful day. Thank you.